Welcome to the Mindset Matters podcast, where we dive deep into the world of mindset, entrepreneurship, and real estate. Your host is RJ DeLeon. Whether you're a seasoned business owner, an aspiring entrepreneur, or looking to level up your mindset, this podcast is your go-to resource for inspiration, knowledge, and actionable strategies. Tune in.
This too shall pass. That is a Persian adage translated and used in several languages. The reason I love it is because it reflects on the temporary nature of the human condition. Also, it was Abraham Lincoln's favorite quote. That quote's brought to us today by Mike Kehoe. Who's Mike Kehoe? I'll tell you who he's not. He's not the lieutenant governor of Missouri. In fact, he's much more interesting. Mike's a longtime entrepreneur, starting a few fintech companies in his 20s, most notably Charge Savvy, but also Caliber Merchant Solutions. So he built these companies in his 20s, sold them in his 30s, which I believe gave him the runway to explore real estate. Maybe it was before, maybe not. We'll find out. I've had the pleasure of meeting Mike through our local real estate community, and I've had the pleasure of watching him grow to the real estate professional he is today. He's now the owner and co-founder of a virtual wholesale company that does 100 plus transactions per year. He has had many successes, many failures along the way, and we're going to explore and deep dive that today with him on Mindset Matters. So as always, guys, you're listening to Mindset Matters with your host, RJ DeLeon. My company's EJC Partners, who's a value-add construction company for real estate investors, and NVR Capital, whose mission is to provide professionals and working families with financial freedom so that they can explore their own passions. We sponsor this show because we know in life, two things are inevitable: failure and disappointment. It's my mission to share the stories of our guests to help understand the mindsets they've created to become successful. Think of it as an audio mastermind to help you navigate challenges of all kinds. So with that being said, let's bring on our guest, Mike. What's going on, man? Pleasure to see
you. Thanks for having me, man.
Yes, definitely. And I wasn't lying about that, dude. It's such a pleasure getting to know you, seeing your career, watching you expand in the real estate world. So happy to have you on as a friend and as a guest. The first question that we always ask our guests is, man, how did you get started? So you're an entrepreneur from a young age. You've built and sold successful companies. How did that all begin? Where did you find your edge as an entrepreneur?
I've always been entrepreneurial, and out of college, started many different things. I did get a job right out of college, which was at Enterprise Rent-A-Car, and worked there for 6 months. And then I went through their management program, hated it. And then I went to the next sales job. I was just never really a great employee, and I was always looking for more. And so meanwhile, having those sales jobs, I started a photo booth company out of college that didn't work at all, a big failure, and didn't waste a lot of money, but wasted a lot of time on it. But after a while, I found this interesting niche for business services called credit card processing. And I really liked it because if you sign up an account to help a business take credit cards, you get paid residually every single month for as long as you have that account. And I had a family friend that did it, the same thing. They did very well. I think their, you know, monthly residual income was 60 grand or so a month. I was like, I want some of that. And he barely did anything. So he just traveled and just kind of hung out and, you know, serviced his accounts as needed. I talked my buddy, who was already a successful entrepreneur, into starting this venture with me. A day after my wife and I got back from our honeymoon, I quit my job and we just started that company.
Wow. That seems so crazy.
Yeah.
The one thing that I love to pull out of these stories is the fact that you weren't like truly an entrepreneur straight out the gate. You had a lot of failures along the way. And that's part of the stories that we were talking about. Like, we're going to dive into those failures, because one thing that we know as entrepreneurs, the entrepreneurs that make the most mistakes tend to be the most successful as long as they always get back up, right? Tell us now a little bit about the space you're in now. So you went from fintech and now you're this big entrepreneur mogul when it comes to real estate. Tell us about those failures because everybody wants to know.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call myself a mogul, but I appreciate that. Yeah, I've been in real estate for about 3 or 4 years now. When I started in real estate, I had a massive failure. So I had just recently sold my company, had a little bit of runway, as you alluded to before, and time to figure out what I wanted to do next. And I met a guy at the gym who was in real estate. He seemed like a great dude. And I just kind of shadowed him and he kind of became my mentor. Unfortunately, he turned out to be not the most honest person. And I invested, you know, six figures with him and he ended up taking all six figures that I invested with him. So that was a huge failure right out of the gate. I now see that at first it hurt a lot. I was pissed. You know, I was going to get into lawsuits and go that route, but it was just weighing too heavily on me and my spirit, really. And so I just needed to let that go, see that as an MBA, an expensive MBA, and just move on from it. And if I didn't keep going, you know, I'd probably have a job. I'd probably be still sulking in the fact that I let someone take advantage of me, that type of thing. But I kept going in real estate, kept networking, and I knew there were good people in the space like you. And so I just kept, you know, trying to find more and more people to talk to work with, to learn from. And I eventually got to the place where I'm at now, where, you know, I have a wholesale company. I fell into the wholesale niche in real estate. Started off really small, but now I've grown it to, you know, doing 10 plus deals a month in North Carolina. I live in Chicago, so I'm doing it totally virtually. But I've got a full team that helps me, all stateside, with a couple of VAs, but mostly stateside employees.
Wow. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm sorry. Because that must have hurt. I know what it's like trusting somebody that then goes on to take advantage of you. The one thing that we can pull out of this story is a highlight that Mike didn't dwell on it. What he did is he stood back up, dusted himself off, and started to educate himself and network with other people. And that's the type of mistakes that we're talking about. Because now, being a little bit more affluent in real estate, I imagine Mike does a bit more due diligence, has better understanding, and going down that hardship of, should I pull a lawsuit on this guy or not? You definitely educated yourself on the ins and outs of between what's legal, what's not, what repercussions there are, and all that outcome. So I definitely want to say, I'm glad you're here with us today and also very happy that you put me in that esteem bucket of good people, of good people that are along the ride with you. You started out small. That's something that I want to touch base on as well. Is that always the case? Did you sometimes often have bigger eyes than your stomach? Like, tell us about the entrepreneur journey when it comes to starting a business, because now you have so many successful companies. I imagine you have a lot of experience when it comes to scaling and structure.
Yeah, I do, because I've done it wrong. So the first business that I had that was, you would consider successful, was a payments company called Swift Pay Systems. And it was run by the seat of, like, we flew by the seat of our pants. There wasn't a lot of organization, not a lot of structure. It was chaos. I hated it. My partners hated it. Our customers hated us. We hated them. We made decent money. We had made this decent money, but it was so stressful. There was a lot of support involved in it. And we just didn't have the structure in place and didn't have the, like, we didn't train employees to be able to answer questions that they should be able to answer and take care of issues, small issues for us, where we were answering all the issues, taking care of all the tech problems, that type of thing. And so I knew moving forward after that business, like, I needed to do something different. So I'm very intentional now when I build a business. I personally now use the Entrepreneur's Operating System from the book Traction. We love that. We operate our current wholesale business on that platform, I guess you can say, or strategy. So we do all the meetings that it suggests in the book. We follow it to a T. And it's been really, really helpful. It has helped us create our core values, which we operate, we hire, we fire off of those. We do everything off of our core values. And it's been, it sounds like a little bit, you know, corny, but it actually goes a really, really long way. When your back's against the wall and you're in a situation, and then you think about your core values and be like, okay, this is a core value that I have grit. That's one, you know, we're going to push through here. That's super important. Commit to excellence, do the right thing. Those are core values of ours. And we follow those and make sure that everybody that comes on our team also follows those. And also all our vendors, like our vendors, you can have really crappy vendors that can ruin your life as well and make it super difficult. So anybody that's in our ecosystem, we have follow those core values. And so within that book too, in Traction, it helps you put systems, processes, org charts, those types of things in place. It also is really helpful to have, I'm more of a visionary. And in that book, they talk about visionary and integrator role. And you need both of those skill sets. My first business, we were two visionaries, and I was forced to, my other partner was a visionary through and through. Whereas I can be kind of an integrator, but I hate my life if I'm being an integrator. And so it was just miserable. The business was just like crazy chaotic, like I said. And so I finally found an integrator, and it's been fantastic. It's a great marriage that we have. That's why I think that we found the success that we've had.
Thank you for sharing that. Guys, that book is Traction by Gino Wickman, who Mike has recommended to me, and I've read two times over now. Now, the difficulty comes in putting that into place, which brings me to my next question. So it sounds like with the first company, it was chaotic. You hated it. Everybody hated it because there was no organization. And I'm sure the flow of information was fragmented, difficult, and sucked. How do you go from being that type of operator to now where you are? Because I got to imagine it was a very difficult process. So are you a very structured individual in your day-to-day?
You know, I go through moments where, yes, I am. I'm very disciplined. Discipline for me is absolutely freedom. So when I'm disciplined, I'm more happy, I'm more successful. I have more energy. If I get up in the morning, I journal, do whatever, I read, you know, do have a morning routine, those types of things. Now that I have kids, it's kind of taken me out of it a little bit. But I know that when I'm not disciplined and have, you know, very structured throughout the day, if I'm finding myself being lethargic and just like unhappy, those types of things, take a high level look at my life at that current moment. And it's pretty obvious that I've been kind of like being in the process department or structure or discipline department. And so I always reset quite a bit.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear that advice from outside perspective. We're saying that you have to be diligent and disciplined in your plans and the way you move forward. So structure your days. If you're unhappy with yourself, it sounds like Mike realizes that he's the most unhappy when he realizes he's not structured, which is absolutely advice I could take for myself. Another thing that you said here is you have your bouts, you have your moments. And the whole idea here is that we follow a plan, but it doesn't have to be a sprint. It's a journey. Just figure it out along the way. And when you find yourself in these unhappy moments, do something like Mike does. Take a step back at your life, unpack it. Is it because you're not deliberate? Is it because you're not structured? Is it because your organization is not set up properly? I love that story that you gave us from the first business that you set up to how chaotic it was, how it flowed through straight to the customer. You hated the customers. Customers hated you know, because I feel that way sometimes as well. And oftentimes it's just taking a step back and taking a look at some of the key aspects in your life. For sure. I appreciate that. You want to talk a little bit about your entrepreneur journey, figuring out who you were and where it was going to take you. So I know you landed in fintech. Was there a big aha moment? And then when you went into real estate, was it really just that one person, or did it take a little bit more diving in before you jumped head deep?
Yeah, good question. So the first part with FinTech, it was, so SwiftPay Systems, how it was kicking off some pretty good residual, even though it was run very poorly. And then one of our salespeople brought us an idea to create this technology, point of sale technology, that helped businesses fight fraudulent chargeback. And that technology in a certain sector just blew up. Like, it took off. Like, even though that was super unorganized, I feel like every once in a while you get super lucky and you really fulfill a need, and then you just hold on for dear life, which was what happened with our technology that we had built, our point of sale technology. It kind of took on a life of its own, and I ended up selling that, which was Charge Savvy. So that was kind of like, I guess, my aha moment there. It wasn't really like super intentional. I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back, it was just like a good product market fit. And then with real estate, what was the question? I'm sorry, about the real estate, the second part.
Well, was it an aha moment for real estate too? And I apologize, that's my fault, because oftentimes I throw in these 2, 3, 4 part questions.
Okay.
Just with real estate, like, after you went to the lowest low in real estate, how did you know that that's what you wanted to do and keep pursuing?
Good question. Yeah. So I did some flips in Chicago. So I owned some, and they were all 3-unit flips. So I did, three or four three flats in Chicago. I had some crazy experiences here with squatters and types of things like that, which is another story. But I realized I didn't want to invest necessarily in Illinois anymore. So I started looking at other markets, and I had a couple friends that I met on BiggerPockets. Funny enough, I met my business partner on BiggerPockets.
It's awesome. Yeah,
pretty funny. We'd taken a trip. One of my buddies had a background. He went to school in North Carolina, and he was like, let's check out North Carolina. I watched Neil Bawa's like presentation on how to pick a market.
Oh yeah.
Did some numbers there. Did a visit in North Carolina, went and visited every primary, tertiary, and secondary market in North Carolina. And we're like, okay, I think we could do some business there. Went down there looking for property to Burr, essentially. It was, you know, a great market, Burr market. But then we realized that we couldn't find any deals that made sense for our fundamentals. We're very conservative. So it was really difficult. What wholesalers were sending to us and what we were seeing on the market just didn't work. We started to realize we got to find our own way of marketing direct to sellers. We tried Facebook, did okay with that, but then we started doing direct mail, and we started to get a lot of responses, and we were starting to have a lot of conversations with sellers, and some of the deals would work for us for our own portfolio that we kept, but there were a ton, like a lot more, that were decent deals that would be good for others, someone else's fundamentals, but not ours. And so we're like, okay, let's try to talk to some other real estate investors and see if they're interested in these deals. And we did the first like three, we made 25K spreads on each. And then I was like, that was the aha moment. I was like, okay,
wow,
if we can just replicate this and just like make a process around this, make a business around this, you know, I think we can do pretty well for ourselves. And also at the same time, you know, make that active income and invest in real estate. So it's the best of both worlds. And yeah. So that was my aha moment for sure. When we first got those like first three deals, and it felt pretty good.
Yeah.
Because I had a go in real estate. Like I had a lot of downs in real estate before that.
Yeah. Which is huge. And the biggest thing there is you picked yourself up and you continued to move forward. You weren't this doubtful, angry person that said, nobody makes money in real estate. You continued to move the needle forward and still make yourself vulnerable and open to finding partners and open to making mistakes. I think that's huge. And that's amazing. And then you fell into this niche because you had your own problem to solve. And now you're solving those problems. And on top of it, you get to cherry pick those deals. It's crazy. How do I get in that back pocket?
It is nice. It's really nice. I just underwrite deals all day. You know, my team just brings me hard deals, and we're really into creative financing right now. So it's fun. I do love it. You're right. I guess I did fulfill our own need, and now I'm fulfilling it for others for sure.
Yeah, definitely. That's what happens with entrepreneurs a lot of times. You know, they're pursuing a passion, which your passion was real estate, my passion was real estate, and then they find a need in the marketplace and then they just go ahead and fill it themselves, which is why I have EJC Partners, which is why I started general contracting business, because I had a lot of difficulties and I had a lot of problems with trust and a lot of issues with salesy guys that I did not trust. So I went ahead and started my own company, which sounds like it's what you did as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great way to start a business. It's really the only way to start a business, really, I would say. You got to fulfill a need, right?
Yeah, exactly. So behind the scenes, what we know of every successful man, woman, child, whoever, there's always a support system behind the scenes. Is your wife involved in the real estate, or who's your go-to support system? How does that dynamic work?
Good question. So she's definitely a support system, but she's not involved in real estate. So when I first started my business, like I said, my business a long time ago, I quit literally the day after our honeymoon with the $6,000 that we got in gift, like $6,000 cash that we got in gifts from the honeymoon. Holy. And I used that as my runway. And I don't know how we lived, but we did. And so she worked, you know, she's worked at PepsiCo for a long time. And so she worked, she has the steady job. She still does at PepsiCo. And so she kind of is the steady portion. I'm kind of the crazy guy, the entrepreneur that's going out and doing all these different projects. So she's got the steady, you know, we're totally different people. And it's nice to have that support. But it is kind of like being on an island, especially operating this from virtually, this business virtually. I have people that are in North Carolina. My business partner lives in Napa, California. So I spend a lot of time in this room that you're seeing me in right now. You know, we just connect a lot. My business partner is probably one of my biggest support systems. And then just people that I've met on Bigger Pockets and people that I've met through Collective Genius, which is the mastermind group that we're in. Those guys are phenomenal. So it's just, I just search people out whenever I know I'm feeling like down. Like I don't know about you, but operating virtually, I sometimes just feel like I want to connect with someone. And I just follow that urge and I'll be like, okay, I should call someone. I should call this person. I should call this person and just connect with them. And I usually get a lot of energy off of that. If I don't, then I'm just like in my head. And again, I'm having that. I'm like lethargic. I'm not able to focus, do those types of things. I get energy off of connection most of the time. That's kind of the way I've operated so far. I would like to eventually be in an office with people that I'm working with, but for right now, it's all virtual.
That's great. And I'm so happy with you and that you've been able to find a wife that's supportive in that regard. Because the one question that I always get is, how did you get your wife involved in real estate? And I'm always like, I didn't. She got me involved. Like, and it's like one of those things where it's a happy balance. And I'm super happy that you're able to find the support in your wife to let you do your entrepreneurial things. Because if that wasn't the way it was, it would be an uphill battle. So my suggestion to people that always ask, like, how did you get your wife? How do you get your significant other? It's you don't. You have those open conversations sure. And you figure out their risk tolerance and you figure out a compromise. I'm sure there were long, restless nights, you know, arguments and stuff. We don't want to go down that road. But the same is true of Nicole and I. She has a steady W-2, allows me to venture down this crazy path. And I'm hoping to hit that success sometime too. And it's just, I got to keep chugging along.
Yeah.
Some people may look at me and be like, wow, he's super successful. To me, I'm like, I'm still trying to figure it out. And same when I look at you, I'm like, wow, Mike's super successful. But you're probably sitting there, I still got to figure this out.
Yeah. 100%, man. Yeah. Most successful, quote unquote, successful people feel that way. Right.
Yeah.
So we're always pushing ourselves and always moving the goalposts. Yeah. So we have definitely have our ups and downs. I've got my ups and downs, as I've mentioned many times here already. Mm-hmm. It's just what you do with them. You know, you can't let them hold you back. Yeah.
That's what I really like about this show is sometimes we get people on here and, you know, we start making ourselves vulnerable, which is really the only reason we've been able to grow. And some people may look at that vulnerability as risk. Some people may look at that as behaviors or patterns or attitudes. But really, when it boils down, it's, you know, how vulnerable can you make yourself, to other people? How honest can you be with yourself? Because you got to learn and grow. Guys, I'm talking to the audience here. Like, you got to make yourself vulnerable. Like, be your own worst critic, but don't allow the outside influences to beat you down. Because you got to do what Mike did here. You got to stand up every single time, dust yourself off, and figure out how to move forward. Because if you didn't die, if you're still walking, moving, you have the capabilities to be physically capable, then there's no reason that you can't start over. I didn't say that so eloquent, but it's all right.
No, I think you did all right, RJ. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, no matter what age, I think, I don't know, I'm 36, but I'm pretty sure like your 40s, 50s, 60s, you can still do something and not let it hold you back. You're right. I mean, I could die tomorrow, right? And that's kind of like the philosophy that I live by. I'm really into stoicism right now. And just, I don't know, don't let that inner voice hold you back. Be, like you said, be vulnerable. It helps in every situation. I lead with vulnerability. I'm an open book. I haven't had one person, well, I've had one person quit, I should say, but that was a different story. But
yeah,
you know, most people have stayed on my team because I'm super vulnerable. You know, like I say, yep, guys, I don't have all the answers here. If I'm like telling some, like if we have a new process that we're putting into place, like I'm vulnerable about it. I'm, you know, guys, I'm worried about this as well. I think this is the right process. I think this is the right direction for us, but please speak up. I'm not like some God that knows exactly what to do and knows that this will be successful. You guys have good ideas too. I want to hear them, please.
And yep.
Yeah. So I agree with that. I think being vulnerable is super powerful.
Yeah.
It's about strong. It's not weak.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a big problem with the way that we're raised and big problem with American society, masculine toxicity, I guess. I hate using that word, but because a lot of times that's what makes us alpha dogs. But at the same time, it's like, you could be vulnerable. You could cry. Like it's, you could do whatever nowadays. You shouldn't be judged by it, but you should also never hold back or judge somebody else because of it. That brings on.
Yeah. It's just, if you're not, it's just a great way to build resentment and be pissed off at the world.
Yes.
And exactly. I've gone through life like that before for brief moments like that. It's just a terrible, terrible feeling. So,
and I feel like we all battle that a lot, and it's an uphill battle, and we got to consistently remind ourselves, just like being in a growth mindset versus fixed mindset, having limiting beliefs, there's always going to be times in your life where you feel set back. And I constantly have to repeat this on the podcast, because if you've been listening, you know, there's going to be one story in here, one person that you hear, Mike Kehoe could be your answer. Like, we are all the same humans and we're inherent to human behavior. Just want to let you guys know that it's normal. It's normal.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to pick yourself up, dust yourself off. Mike, I do want to bring it back to some of these horror stories that you had in real estate.
Yeah.
Why don't you pick a horror story that you won't mind telling us, and tell the audience how you overcame that, if there wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind telling you. I don't mind telling you any of them.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, like in real estate specifically.
Yeah, real estate, or I mean, it could even be the fintech companies, because we all have huge losses.
Could do real estate. Yeah, we could do real estate. So I invested. I mean, the big one was around 100 grand with that person that wasn't who I thought he was. But part of that story is he asked me to invest in a four unit in Pilsen, and I would just be investing the money as the private money lender, and he would operate the deal, and I would just get a return from my money. I forget what the whole deal was. I think we bought it for 325, and what we're going to do is we're going to rezone it. It had a lot next to it. We're going to rezone it. and just flip it to a developer. While that was happening, after I invested, after about a month, he stopped, you know, picking up phone calls, that type of thing. And I should have gone down there and seen the project and like walked it and that type of thing. But I didn't, honestly, at the time, I was so new that I didn't really know much about real estate and how to analyze deals and those types of things. And while this was happening, he was going like, he was going belly up on loans across the city. Like if you look up his name right now, in Chicago's deeds or records or whatever, he's got like 30 lawsuits plus against him for people that are suing him.
Did it end up being a Ponzi scheme? Was he using funds?
Yeah. So he would take the construction draws. So he would get loans through Renovo or whoever and hard money lenders. And he would take those construction draws and then put it into, and he would max them out too. And so he would fabricate them. And then he put it into a different project. So there'd always be one project left behind. And so there were like projects sitting forever. And so anyways, so he just let this deal go. And I actually brought a friend in to lend on this real estate or this deal with me. And he was asking me questions about it and I wasn't getting any answers. And so I went to the building to go look at it. And I noticed when I got there, there were people living in the building, and it was supposed to be vacant. It was a dilapidated building. It was supposed to be vacant because we were rezoning it. We're going to flip it right to a developer. And they were like, so there was this one person in the building that I later found out that he let move in and pay $700 a month to live there. She turned herself into the landlord of the building and rented out every single unit. And they were all gangbangers. Like there were probably 30 people living in the building.
Oh man.
And so, yeah. So I was just, I went there, knocked on the door and was like, just like super scared, you know, everybody like sure. The person answered. And I was like, hey, you know, I own the building. That was mistake number one. I own the building. What are you guys doing here? You're not supposed to be here. And then, you know, they told me some choice words, close the door, blah, blah, blah. And so after that, what I did was I went and put a note on the door and I wrote, hey, you guys need to be out of this building ASAP. I'm just trying to save the deal. Man. Like the guy's not answering my phone calls because I needed to sell it. And the loan wasn't being paid either. He was supposed to be paying the loan, the hard money loan, and the loan wasn't being paid either. So I was getting called by the hard money lender too. And so I couldn't get him out. I called the cops. The cops said they had squatter's rights, that type of thing. And so finally I called the cops and I was like, just come with me here. I'm going to try to do a cash for keys negotiation. And the cops are like, what are you talking about? They're like, the only way for you to do this is to a victim. And I was like, no, there's another way. I'm going to try to pay them to get out. And they're like, all right, like this isn't going to work. And so I went and I negotiated with these, like all of these people, and I ended up paying 12 and a half grand to get everybody out of the building. It was like a really, really long story, but a lot, like much longer than I'm sharing right now.
Sure. No, it's okay.
Many times that I had to go back and like, I had a hammer in my pocket as my weapon in case anything happened. And so finally I got them out. I got them all out, boarded it up, found a buyer. I found my own buyer. Like I skip traced a bunch of numbers, found my own buyer, and I ended up being able to sell the building for cash. I paid my buddy off. I paid my buddy his full amount that he put in, and I lost like 15 grand. And meanwhile, before we were closing, or during due diligence or whatever, a couple of the guys kept breaking back in. So I had to then pay for the dog's doors to come out and put them back
on.
And then, it's so pretty crazy.
I apologize for making you rehash that. And I'm super thankful that you were able to tell that story. And if I could pull a few things out of this, first of all, it's your resilience and grit. I mean, you did so much craziness that we probably shouldn't recommend to our listeners.
Right.
But at the same time, he was so diligent and vigilant with being able to, and I think a lot of that was your integrity to pay back your buddy. So you lost 100%. Money and you paid back your buddy. And that shows your integrity there. There's a lot of learning.
I mean, my money is one thing, but I care way more about people's money than I care about my money. Like, I'm going to get you your money back before I'm going to get my money back. I mean, we were going to, and the reason I had to take those like drastic measures and like do things that you guys shouldn't do, the audience shouldn't do, there were other things that I shouldn't have done. But the only reason I did that is just because of my friend's money that was in the deal. I didn't even care about my money. We were going to let it, at one point, we were going to let it go into foreclosure. And I just like, for one day, I thought that's what we were going to do. And I'm like, you know what, F it, I'm going to take care of this. And I remember the day that I got them all out, boarded up, it was crazy. The sun was shining and I just let it hit my face. And I'm like, I am a badass. Like, I cannot believe, you should have seen the people that were living in this place. Like, they were, they were super scary.
Yeah.
And I just figured it out. And by the time they were like friends with me, I would like have that ability to make them like kind of have that relational ability. But yeah, it was crazy.
You are a badass.
I felt
it's
that
so
way.
It's so funny. It's so funny you had that riding off into the sunset moment where the sun's beating down in your face and you're just so extremely happy. But I mean, there's a few more lessons that we could pull out of here, right? Because with the audience, you know, we always talk about these things, get in real estate investing, we make it sound and look so easy. So first of all, there is an amount of due diligence and risk tolerance that you have to assess for yourself before jumping in. Because everything that we're saying, it's amazing. Passive income, active income, equity in buildings, like this type of stuff does truly create generational wealth. However, you do, when coming into it, sometimes being extremely green, you learn the lessons you need to learn, but not everybody comes back from those. And I'm really happy that you were able to come back from that, Mike, because that's an extreme crazy story and super happy and thankful you're here today. If you didn't persevere and see your way through that, troubleshoot it, do your due diligence after the fact, we may have never met. Mike and I have met through the real estate community. We've met up multiple times with different mastermind, like happy hours and stuff like that. And it's truly a pleasure in being able to interact with people that are so successful and just being able to know like how open we all are. And that's the biggest thing. Where Mike said at the beginning, you got to make your, you know, I said it too, you got to make yourself vulnerable, right? It's because you got to assess your own risk. You got to open yourself up to other people, but also you got to learn. You just basically have to learn. Be a master of the craft and learn.
Right.
That's so crazy. It's so crazy. I were twisting and turning straight through this. You want to tell us a bit about your business today. So I know you have the wholesale component, but you're also keeping a portion of it. Are you syndicating stuff too? Tell us about your business today.
Yeah, thank you. So I operate as two brands. One is Venture Stack, which is the buyer investor facing brand. They buy deals from us. Green Street Home Buyers is our seller facing brand. So we market directly to sellers. We send about 30,000 mailers a month to sellers. And then we have a system where our sellers call into our acquisitions team. Our acquisitions team will negotiate contract and then we'll sell that contract to our buyers list via Venture Stack. We get, like you said earlier, we get access to a lot of deals. And right now we're seeing a lot of opportunity to pick up deals creatively through seller financing, subject to those types of things. A lot of people have asked how they can invest with us. We haven't really had opportunities in the past, but this new creative finance opportunity is kind of creating an opportunity for those folks that want to invest. There's just a lot of people that are behind on mortgages that are stressed out right now with the market softening, those types of things. A lot of people with their houses, you know, days on market are it's wild right now for them, even though it's kind of normalized. And so they're really stressed out and they're open to other options besides cash and just putting it on the market.
Yeah. That reminds me of the it wasn't Warren Buffett quote, when there's blood on the streets, you buy, right? And
yeah, it was the Warren Buffett quote was, "Be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful."
Something that like that.
Yeah.
No, I actually think that's an often misquoted term.
Oh, sorry. Because
you know better than me. No, because I think that that is the quote that I was trying to say, but Warren Buffett actually didn't say it. And I learned that the other day when I was reading up on the quotes, and I was like, holy crap, that's mind-boggling, because everybody quotes him for saying it. But another person was actually quoted for saying that before him. So I think he learned it from him, perhaps.
Well, I got to look that up.
But again, who knows? I make mistakes all the time. Don't quote me, guys. But I do deplore you to look it up, and maybe we'll have it in the show notes of who actually said that. That's truly amazing, though. It's one of those things where you don't really know the direction you're headed, but when opportunity knocks, you got to take that opportunity. And that's one of the differences. I consistently say this. This is in the book, Art of War, by James something, sorry. And he says that's often the difference between a professional and amateur, is the ability to act on an opportunity. And when you put yourselves in these positions, time in and time out, you start to get better at recognizing the opportunity, what's real, what's fake, what you should take action on, and being able to make that split second decision into, this is something I should go down, or no, that's not for me. That's 100%. Often the difference there, guys. And you know, that's one of those things. I'm sure Mike in his early fintech days didn't know that. And you know, I still feel like a squirrel chasing around a plastic bag sometimes. I'm like, what's going on? There's so many opportunities. And that's why we got to get more structured. And when you're feeling lost, depressed, lethargic, reflecting and becoming more structured.
Yeah, you're right. And in this market, this market, there's going to be a lot of opportunity to get that shiny object syndrome. There's going to be a lot of opportunities. So you do need that structure. You need to be able to test things and pour gasoline on what works and water what fails. That's like, we're really good. I think one of the things that I'm really good at is testing things, right?
Yeah.
We started out with, like, when I was talking about our business in the beginning, I think we did like a couple hundred mailers, and now we're up to 30,000 a month because we test, and we'll be doing more, you know, next year, or maybe a different marketing method.
That's insane. And that's one of the things, like, when people ask me if they should come in the business being a wholesaler, I say no. I say no because they don't realize the extreme amount of pressure, diligence, work that has to be done to be a successful wholesaler. You send out over 3 million, you know, pieces of mail a year, 30,000 a month. Like, that's insane. And like, people, you know, come in, they like say, oh, I heard you could be a wholesaler and make capital, just almost like you can make capital appear out of thin air.
It's
like, no, do you not realize, like, Mike, your marketing budget is probably in the hundreds of thousands of dollars at this point. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Right. But Dan, one of the largest wholesalers in Chicago and across the country. Well, I don't know if he's largest across the country, but he says his marketing budget is $1.2 million a year. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. And, you know, all these newbies come in, and it's one of those things like not doing the proper due diligence. So these newbies come in and they think they could make fat cash through wholesaling with no money down. It's like, come on, man, like, do your homework a little bit, please.
And
then they get angry at you for telling you you can't do it. I'm like, I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying you can't do it with no money.
It can be done. You know, I've seen people do it, but I agree. That wasn't a way that I could have done it. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's got to be a very, very specific situation. And I agree with you. It is not like, I cannot believe today I'm a wholesaler. Like, before, like 2 years ago, if you would have told me that I was going to be a wholesaler, I was like, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Like,
there's
no way. There's no way. Yeah. But we take a business approach to it. Like, that's, like you said, you have to have a massive budget. And if you're going to do it professionally, you can make a living off of it, but it is like it, you kill what you eat, or you eat what you kill. And you got to have a lot of time on your hands, be very persistent, and have very thick skin.
Yep. It's all about that diligence and moving forward. And hey, I'm sorry, you could call me an asshole for saying that stuff. And again, I'm just portraying my own fears and seeing some of the failures of friends, but it's exactly like Mike said, you can do it. And he never thought he would be, but he fell into it. Now he has massive budgets when it comes to that stuff. All I'm saying is do your due diligence. So if you're coming up to me saying you can make, you know, fat stacks of capital with no money down, I'm going to tell you, you can't do it because you didn't do your homework.
Right.
That's hilarious. Anyway, I'm laughing at myself now. Mike, before we jump into the fun round and everything, I want to ask you,
okay,
what would you tell your younger self? What piece of advice do you think would have been pivotal in just hearing it or telling your younger self?
So the quote I gave you, this too will pass, that kind of hits for me, you know, and it doesn't even mean, a lot of people, when they think of that quote, it's all you think about, like, if you're going through a bad situation, this too will pass. But also the good times, you know, having kids, having like, just like seeing your kids grow up, this too will pass, right? Fun things, this too will pass. Everything, this will pass, right? So this age and, you know, being able to do things physically that I'm able to do, this too will pass. So I think that just taking advantage of it and living each day, it is your last. And as corny as that sounds, I really believe it, because it could be. And yeah, that's something that I'm going to get it tattooed on my leg. But
nice.
I really do believe that. Yeah, I really do believe that. And that helps me a lot.
You hit me with a stroke, like right in my chest, because when you said it goes with everything. It goes with the happy times and the happy memories and your physical capabilities. Like I was like, holy, like I didn't think about it that way, but now
I know. I always thought of it, you know, with through negative situations, difficult situations, but it's not just for that. That's more powerful actually, when you think about it. And when you're like going through something, watching your kids grow up, those things.
Much, much more powerful, because we got to think, just it's the message that Mike said there, you know, living every day like it's your last, which means figuring out, like, just living your life, making yourself happy, figuring out what makes you tick, and pursuing your passions, your hobbies, whatever it may be, because this too shall pass. And that's what always happens to a lot of people that don't want to take risk. They end up on their deathbed. They end up complacent life that they are full of resent, full of regrets. And it's because time passed them by without them taking advantage of their youth, without ever changing, without ever really taking that risk or making themselves vulnerable when it comes to being able to take those risks or network with the people that you may think are too good for you or don't have time for you, or you're too old now because XYZ. And it's like, wow. So
yeah,
that's amazing. This too shall pass. I'm going to take that in the perspective that you just showed me. And I'm very thankful for that. So are you ready for the fun round?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's go. All right. Earlier, Mike was watching the soccer, the World Cup.
Yeah, and the World Cup, yeah.
That's the only thing I want to scream to you when you're like, hold on. I was like, let's go. I was like, yes. I'm like, go. Like, I don't know. I don't know why I just brought that up. Doesn't even matter, guys. All right. So we're going into the fun round. That's what happens when I feel comfortable with my guests. I go down these weird topics and I'm just like, hey,
I love that.
Let's shoot the shit for a minute, because, you know, it's been a minute and I miss you, man. I miss you.
Dude.
So let's get into it. The very first question I always ask my guests is, what is the weirdest food that you ate as a child? And is it a secret indulgence today? Do you still eat it today? It could be a candy.
No, I do not eat it today.
Weird shit.
That's a funny question. So what I used to do, I used to take day-old pizza. I used to scrape I used to scrape off the pizza sauce and the cheese, and I used to put sugar on it.
Wow. That's a first. Sugar. Okay.
Yeah, let's sugar go. Pizza. Yeah. I have a big sugar tooth. And back in the day, I was able to do that and not gain 10 pounds just from doing that. So, yeah.
And still stay fit. God.
No, you know, I don't do that now. So, no, that'd be incredibly weird.
Would you let your children, your beautiful girls?
No.
No. You're like, no, guys. Oh, wow.
My wife would kill me.
Okay. A pizza and sugar. That's crazy. I just had a guest say that he used to put salt on everything because he likes savory and sweet. So he puts salt on his ice cream. What?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they have salted ice cream. Yeah, I'm a big ice cream guy. I could almost eat that every day. There was a point where I was eating it every day, but I needed to cut back.
Okay. I'm going to keep this one in the books, in the vault, because for some reason I want to try it.
I would heat it up too. And I think I did butter as well.
Oh,
like
man.
That.
You know what that reminds me of?
And a little cinnamon.
That reminds me. So when I was younger, family friends of mine used to take rice, heat it up with butter and milk and add sugar. And eat it like cereal.
Yeah, see, that sounds amazing.
To me, it sounds amazing. I'm like, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah. Give me some of that.
All right, next question. If your best friend could describe you as a teenager, no holds barred, nobody judging, how would he describe you and your personality?
Oh, man. How would he describe me as a teenager? Probably very close to how he would describe me now. Oh, boy. I guess I don't hold back. I just say what I feel. And that's kind of how I've always been. And that's part of my personality that some people don't like. But not everybody can be a fan of you. So that would probably be it, I guess.
That's true. Not everybody
that's
can
probably
be
why
a
I didn't
fan
fit in.
You.
That's probably why I didn't fit in the corporate culture.
Oh,
it didn't
man.
Work out for me.
Well, it's an interesting question to drill down to, because what entrepreneurs come from every path of life. And it's sometimes interesting to hear, like, you were that when you were younger, you were an introvert, you didn't talk to anybody, you were like, it's very interesting to hear how we can all come out into these great, successful entrepreneurs. But I think that one serves you very well. And thankfully,
yeah, I think so. I mean, I was also very self-conscious back then too. And I was a terrible student too. So I was just like, I think that was part of my journey, is like really just liking myself and loving myself. And back then it wasn't necessarily the case. It's probably more for protection to like say outlandish things and do things, but you know, I've grown.
There
through
you
that.
Go. See thank you for providing that additional insight. Because that's what we want to hear. You weren't a good student. Yeah, you were outlandish. You said a lot of weird stuff because you're self-conscious and you put up a facade. And really, it's identifying this journey that we all have to go on to, and like how we identify with ourselves now and how we come to control those erratic behaviors that we had or our past, and it doesn't define who we are. So. That's amazing.
Right.
Awesome. Next question. If you were stranded on a deserted island, you had access to anything except for human beings and human interaction, no YouTube, nothing like that, what would you find yourself doing?
What would I find myself doing? Oh my gosh. Oh man. I'd probably be trying to make some sort of product that I could sell once I got off the island.
Nice.
I don't know.
Nice. You know? No, that's perfect. Because one thing that people don't hear when I say this is like, you could have access to anything. You could have access to an old car, and it's pretty much unlimited, like mechanical tools, all this stuff. And that just shows us you're an entrepreneur through and through.
Yeah. It's how my mind works, right? So I'm always thinking of something that I could do to make a buck.
Yeah, additional streams of income. And that's not always bad, guys. You got to figure out additional streams of income. The average millionaire has 7 streams of income, whether it's passive or active. That's something that you guys need to know. Whether it's 7 different homes too, like don't belittle that. Like real estate's not just one. It's like I have 7 buildings. It's 7 streams of income.
Yeah, my merchant services, I still like the credit card processing. I still have residual income streams from that, and then real estate, and then a couple other things. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that.
That's huge. And that's what's amazing. And that's what we're trying to portray here, that whether it's you being an entrepreneur, you just making time for yourself to be happy, we do want you all to have financial freedom by investigating what the rich do, what the successful do, having on podcast guests like Mike Kehoe, where you can reach out to him after the show through LinkedIn, whatever. And just, we're all human beings, guys. We're more than happy to talk. And you never know who's sitting next to you, who you may listen to, that's going to change your lives forever. I keep going down these caveats with you. I don't know. I'm way too comfortable.
I thought it was normal.
All right. So here we go. Where's the most beautiful place you've ever visited?
Oh, man, that's tough. Yeah. That is really
tough.
Give
us top three.
Top three. Let's go with Tuscany, Kyoto, Japan, and then Jackson, Wyoming.
Jackson, Wyoming. Wow. Yeah. That was something that I wasn't expecting. That's amazing.
Yeah. Had to throw a US one in there.
I might as well just begin to ask top three, because there's beauty in a lot of different ways. And I'm sure Japan is way different than Tuscany and is way different than Wyoming. That's awesome. Yeah. We're going to put that in show notes, guys. I'm going to start making a bucket list. I don't know if I could drive to Japan or...
Don't ask me. My geography is terrible.
Awesome. Got 2 more for you here real quick. What's the most impactful book that you would recommend to our listeners?
So there's a couple. I'm reading right now Meditations by it is by Marcus Aurelius. I don't know what version I have. It's by Gregory Hayes. It's a pretty good one. And then I follow along with the Daily Stoic Journal, which really helps me. But I usually recommend A New Earth. That's also been really impactful for myself by Eckhart Tolle.
What was that last one?
It's called A New Earth. He also wrote The Power of Now.
Okay, that's awesome. Cool. Well, we certainly appreciate the book recommendations. And the reason that we ask is, you know, we want to know what helps keep you on the journey, on the entrepreneurial path, what helps you keep you focused. So,
yeah,
guys.
Well, and then another one, sorry to cut in there, but if you're like really needing a kick in the ass, Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, of course.
Yeah, that is always.
I need to read that every year.
I need to read it. Like, I'm so
bad. Oh, you
mad.
Haven't?
I have not.
Oh, you'll
read
run
it.
Through a brick wall after you read that.
Oh man, really? I hope so. I hear the stories are crazy.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's worth the read. You should absolutely read it.
Nice. Okay, got it. So we're talking about Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, also in Gregory Hayes' edition, Daily Stoics, which I didn't hear about. Is that a daily blog or something?
No, it's just like this journal, like every day you write the evening reflection and morning reflection. Oh, and it kind of provides you with like a question every day to kind of like reflect on. Like one is like, am I becoming more humble or less humble? And like, you just kind of reflect on that in the morning and the evening. So
I'm really happy I asked the question about that one, because journaling is really tough for me. Guys, journaling is tough for a lot of people. So having something like Daily Stoics can help you a lot. So I went through a 21-day journaling session with Carl Moose, and that was by far the most I've ever written. But that's because it had a framework to what you're writing every day. Here you go, guys. These are your tips. These are your tips from successful entrepreneurs. Don't let this slip you by. Another book is New Earth or Power of Now. Or Can't Hurt Me. Those are all amazing Correct. Suggestions, and we love that.
Yeah.
So
sorry, I gave you like five.
No, I keep bringing them on. Keep pouring right. them on, because I know the more impactful, most impactful book. It's really difficult. Different stages of life impact you in different ways and help you along the journey in different times, because it is a journey. Last yeah. question is, what does the future look like for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm trying to figure that out. Like, I'm actually like journaling and like trying to figure that out. I'm not quite sure if it's Chicago or what I'm doing from a living perspective. I'm really intrigued by what you're about to do. I don't know if you've told the audience, but
yeah, we actually have told the audience. A guest actually dropped it. And so for the audience to hear, my wife and I are going on an RV journey across the United States. We bought the truck. We bought the RV. We got the RV. I got to send you pictures.
Nice.
It's wild. It's crazy. We're going to be documenting the journey. We're going to continue to do the podcast. EJC Partners is going to continue to exist. I'm going through a lot of rough, tough transitionary times, which is why I love doing these podcasts and why I love having a network full of entrepreneurs like Mike, because you don't have to go it alone.
Right.
That's what we often feel.
Yeah.
So the future looks, sorry to steal that away.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're
Let's
good.
Let's go.
So I'm
come on.
Yeah.
Mike, get a truck, get a camper. Let's go. I would love to have you on the road with us.
I think it'd be difficult with my son and daughter. But I know you have a kid, you're going to be able to make that work. So for us, I think there's a lot of opportunity out there right now for creative finance, as I already alluded to. So I want to creatively buy like a house in a destination that has a better, you know, way of life associated with it, whether it be Colorado, Florida, somewhere like that, live there for the school year and then come back to Chicago in the summer. So that might be what that looks like. And then also scooping up a lot of deals during this downturn, creative deals in this downturn for my real estate business and growing that team as well. So that's, you know, hopefully by the end, 3 to 4 years, pretty large portfolio of creative deals.
Nice. Well, we'd love to help you on that journey, whether that's being investors, helping you actively, just whatever it is with that business, we'd love to help you. That's what's amazing about our relationship. We stay in touch. It's like one of those relationships where I could call you a year from now, never have talked to you, and be like, hey, what's up? You know, it's like, it feels like one of those friendships and relationships, which, guys, being in real estate, you're going to find a lot of those. Keep the good ones close. Keep the good ones close. With that said, do you have anything else that you want to tell the audience before we say goodbye?
Are you going to give my contact details?
Well, yeah. So you can actually give your contact details now, but I'm also going to put them in the show notes. So how can the audience get a hold of you?
Well, RJ is going to put them in the show notes, but feel free to reach out. It is one of my favorite things to do, is kind of mentor or just talk with people that are a couple steps behind me or ahead of me, and would love to talk to you as well. And just reach out to me on LinkedIn, you know, Mike Kehoe or Mike@venture-stack.com. And it's Mike@venture-stack.com.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
And so you guys know he is not Mike Kehoe, the Lieutenant Governor of Missouri.
There's a lot of Mike Kehoes. There's a lot of Mike Kehoes you'll find when you look it up online.
Yeah, I Googled your name and that was the first one that popped up. I was like, oh, he's Lieutenant General.
There's one in St. Louis that owns like a ton of car dealerships, which I wouldn't have minded doing. But there's a lot of us out there.
Yeah.
So Kehoe Venture Stack. Just look up Mike Kehoe Venture Stack and it should be able to find me.
Mike Kehoe Venture Stack, guys. Stay in touch. Stay in tune with them. As you know, I always say it's amazing the partnerships and camaraderie that you'll find once you put down your barriers, your limiting beliefs, and actually reach out. The real estate industry is actually very open arms, at least for what I've experienced. Don't be afraid to reach out to us. But as always, guys, thanks for tuning in. This is Mindset Matters with your host, RJ DeLeon. We do not monetize this podcast. At the beginning, I told you that I do sponsor this. So this is being funded out of my own pocket. So the best thing that you guys could do for us is share the podcast, please. If you see me on social media, sharing a link, et cetera, share the podcast with a friend. If you like it, follow it, listen to it, leave us 5-star review, or even send me feedback. I'm at contact@ejcpartners.com. You could email me and tell me how awful I'm doing. I welcome that, even though I'd probably cry. But at the same time, please, guys, please like, share, subscribe to the podcast. Reach out to Mike or I, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Mindset Matters. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to hit that subscribe button to stay updated. We'd also appreciate it if you'd leave us a review. Your feedback helps us improve the show. Thank you for being a part of the community, and remember to keep that positive mindset. Until next time.